This is Audible.
Audible Frontiers presents Monster Hunter International, written by Larry Correa, narrated by Oliver Wyman.
Chapter 1. On one otherwise normal Tuesday evening, I had the chance to live the American dream. I was able to throw my incompetent jackass of a boss from a 14th-story window. Now, I didn't just wake up that morning and decide that I was going to kill my boss with my bare hands. It really was much more complicated than that. In my life up to that point, I would never have even considered something that sounded so crazy. I was just a normal guy, a working stiff. Heck, I was an accountant. It doesn't get much more mundane than that. That one screwed-up event changed my life. Little did I realize that turning my boss into sidewalk pizza would have so many bizarre consequences. Well, technically he did not actually hit the sidewalk. He landed on the roof of a double-part Lincoln Navigator. But I digress. My name is Owen Zastava Pitt, and this is my story. The finance department of Hansen Industries, Inc. was on the 14th floor of a generic-looking office building in downtown Dallas. There were 10 of us accountants, placed in 10 cubicles in a narrow patch of office sandwiched between marketing and the women's restroom. It was your standard professional office, complete with blue industrial carpet, motivational posters, Dilbert cartoons, and some dead potted plants. I was the new guy. It was a pretty good job. The pay was respectable. The work was semi-interesting. Most of my co-workers were easy to get along with. It was my first actual serious career-type job after college, or at least my first job that didn't require heavy lifting or bouncing drunks. Now I had a 401k and dental benefits. My plan was to work hard, find myself a wife, have some kids, and settle down in the suburbs. I was a young professional, and my future looked bright. There was only one major drawback to my job with such a fine, established company. My boss was an angry idiot. Mr. Huffman was the worst kind of boss, incompetent, and always able to find an underling to blame for his own screw-ups. Plus, he was mad at the world. Not really for any specifics, mind you, but more mad at the world in a general way for being mean to him. Despite his laziness and stupidity, his little pig brain just could not comprehend why he was never promoted beyond the same position that he had held for the last decade. It was obvious to him that the world was out to wrong him. After getting to know the man, I could not blame the world one bit. As the newest hire in the Hansen Industries internal auditing department, I was the designated whipping boy for Mr. Huffman's fury. The previous newest hire had committed suicide, thereby creating the opening that I now filled. At the time, I had not really made the connection between job satisfaction and the likelihood of taking a bottle of sleeping pills and washing it down with a fifth of scotch. It had been another 12-hour day, as had become my custom, always hopelessly behind, trying to learn as I went and realizing that college really did not have much of anything to do with the real world. Since my supervisor, the vile Mr. Huffman, was supposed to train me, I was pretty much screwed from the get-go. Since I currently had no life outside of work, except for every Saturday when I worked on my hobby, I did not really mind staying late. Hopefully it would impress somebody important at the company, who might offer me a transfer to their department and out of Huffman's. At least the month had been pleasant. Mr. Huffman had been on vacation, camping at some national park or another. He had come back for a week, wherein he had stayed locked in his office, never speaking to anyone or returning any calls, and then went out on sick leave for a few more weeks. His annual vacation was usually my department's most productive time of year. Go figure. I glanced absently at my watch. 8:05 p.m. The surrounding gray-carpeted cubes were quiet. My stomach growled, signaling that the bag of Cheetos and the banana I had eaten for lunch had long since worn off. It was time to go. I logged out of my computer, locked up my files, and put on my coat as I headed for the door. Believing I was the only one there, I killed the lights on the way out. Then the intercom buzzed. It made me jump.
"Who's there?"
The ponderous voice belonged to Mr. Hoffman. That was a surprise. I had not known that he was back yet. Damn. I kept walking, deciding to pretend that I had not heard the intercom. If Hoffman were here this late, then I did not want to get assigned whatever crap job he was working on, which, knowing what a lazy slug he was sure to happen. He would probably call it delegating, and pat himself on the back for being such a proactive member of the management team.
"Owen, is that you? Come to my office immediately."
Busted.
"Now, Owen, this is important."
He sounded as officious and pompous as usual. As I sulked toward his office, I had to wonder how he had known it was me. Probably a lucky guess. He must have seen the lights go out from his office. I started thinking of excuses to give him about why I needed to leave, but knew from long experience that he would just shoot them all down. Martial arts class? Nope. He already thinks I'm too militant, and he doesn't even know about my gun collection. Church? Fat chance of that. Date? I wish. Sick mother? Worth a shot, I thought. So I approached his office, preparing the story about how I needed to tend to my ill mother. She lived 3 states away, but what Hoffman didn't know couldn't hurt him. When I entered Hoffman's office, all thoughts of my mom's imaginary sickness disappeared. The lights were off, which was very weird. I could not see my boss, as the back of his leather swivel chair was toward me. The city lights provided a small amount of illumination through the windows. I never could figure out how a toad like him had scored a corner office with a view. Perhaps he had some incriminating photos of the CFO with a hooker or something. His huge oak desk was a mess, and there was a stained paper sack sitting in the middle that must have been his dinner. Whatever was in the bag was slowly leaking a sloppy puddle onto the papers on the desk.
"Have a seat, Owen,"
Hoffman rasped. His voice sounded strange. He did not turn around to look at me. From the top of his head, it appeared that he was looking at the evening sky.
No thanks, sir. I've really got to be going. My mom is sick, and...
I said, sit!
He shouted as he spun around in his chair. I gasped, partly because Mr. Hoffman had a look in his eyes like he was insane, but mostly because he was totally naked. Not something that I ever thought I would have to see. The lower half of his jowly face was stained with something dark and greasy, as if he had gone hog wild at a barbecue. Okay, that's certainly different. I raised my hands in front of me.
Look, sir, I've got to say that I don't swing that way. You do your thing, I don't care. Some guys would be flattered, but I'm out of here,
I stated as I slowly backed toward the door.
Silence!
He shouted. slamming his chubby fingers onto the desk hard enough to rattle it and knock over his dinner bag, spilling its contents. I froze, surprised at the fierce intensity of the command, which was unexpected coming from a man like Huffman, who had what could best be described as jiggly man bosoms.
"Do you know what tonight is, Owen? Do you? Tonight is a very special night."
"Is it all-you-can-eat shrimp night at Sizzler's?" I replied calmly as I reached back and put my hand on the doorknob. It was official. Mr. Huffman had gone nuts. It looked like he was foaming at the mouth.
"Tonight, I punish the wicked. A month ago, I was given a gift. Now, I'm king. I've seen how you and the others talk about me behind my back. How you don't respect my leadership."
My boss's voice had lowered into a growl. His eyes darted about as if he were seeing exciting things in the dark corners of the office.
"You're the worst, Owen. You're not a team player. You don't respect my authority. You want to steal my job. You want to stab me in the back."
I didn't want to stab him in the back, but I was about ready to punch him in the face. My earlier assessment was right. He really was foaming at the mouth. Being attacked by a fat, naked Mr. Huffman was not that much of a worry, as I was what could best be called a big fellow, and, surprising for an accountant, knew how to kick some butt if necessary. The situation felt surreal and slightly amusing, but I knew that crazy people could be unpredictably dangerous. It was time to slip out and call for some professional help. I turned the door handle, idly wondering if our health plan covered psychiatric care.
"Just take it easy, Mr. Huffman. I'm not out to get you. I'm just going to step out for a second."
Then I noticed what had spilled out of the dinner bag.
"Is that a hand?" I blurted.
Huffman ignored me and continued yelling and pounding the desk. Each strike made his layers of blubber ripple dangerously. Sure enough looked like a woman's hand, complete with painted nails, a wedding ring, and a jagged stump where the wrist bones were sticking out.
Holy crap! My boss wasn't just a run-of-the-mill crazy. I was working for a serial killer.
The naked, crazy fat man pointed out the window.
"The time has come. Tonight, I am a god!"
he squealed. His sausage-like finger was pointing at the full moon. As I watched in the pale lunar glow and the yellowish backdrop of the city lights, that finger seemed to stretch. The hands began to elongate, and the fingernails thickened and spread. He looked at me, and I saw that his grin now stretched from ear to ear, literally, and his gums and teeth began to protrude menacingly past his lips. Thick, dark hair was sprouting from his pores. Huffman screamed in pain and exhilaration as the popping and cracking of bones filled the room.
"Owen, you're mine now. I'm gonna eat your heart."
His words were barely understandable through his dripping jaw and swelling tongue. His teeth were growing in length and sharpness. For a second I froze, paralyzed by conflicting emotions as reason came to a screeching halt. The room was dark enough that the civilized part of my brain was trying to convince the primitive caveman section of my brain that this was just some sort of visual trick, a sick, practical joke, or something else logical. Luckily for me, the caveman won. To this day, I don't know why at that moment I felt the need to make a confession to my rapidly mutating boss. Even though I was in accordance with Texas state law, I was in direct violation of the company's workplace safety rule. "You know that no weapons at work policy?" I asked the twitching and growing hairy monstrosity standing less than 10 feet from me. His yellow eyes bored into me with raw, animal hatred. There was nothing recognizably human in that look. "I never did like that rule," I said, as I bent down and drew my gun from my ankle holster, put the front sight on the target, and rapidly fired all 5 shots from my snub-nosed .357 Smith & Wesson into Mr. Huffman's body. God bless Texas. The creature that had been Huffman staggered back against the window, leaving a smear of blood and tissue as it slid down the glass onto the carpet. Some of the bullets had either missed or over-penetrated and cracked the thick window. Not staying to examine, I turned and ran, almost breaking my nose as I crashed into the door while trying to open it. I took the time to slam it behind me before sprinting down the narrow hallway, empty gun in one hand, fingers of my other hand groping through my coat pocket for my speed loader of extra ammo. Huffman's office door flew open with a bang. The thing standing in the doorway was clearly more animal than man, but obviously not any normal animal. My supervisor's fatty bulk had been somehow twisted into a sleek and muscled form. Long claws tore divots into the blue industrial carpet. Coarse black hair covered his body, and the wolf face was a nightmare come to life. Lips pulled back into a drooling snarl, revealing a row of razor-like teeth. Now on all fours, he raised his muzzle and smelled the air, howling when he spotted me. The blood in my veins turned to ice. Running in the direction of the elevator, I snapped the cylinder of my revolver closed with 5 more Federal 125-grain hollow points inside. The creature was fast, much faster than an Olympic sprinter, and I was no Olympic sprinter. My lead down the hallway dwindled in seconds. I spun and fired as it leapt at me, striking the beast in the face. His snout turned on impact, and momentum carried him into the wall, crushing the sheetrock. Immediately he started to rise, jagged fur bristling down his back. I'm a very good shot. The tiny revolver was not my best weapon for accuracy, but I did my part. Focusing on the front sight, aiming for the creature's skull, I pulled the trigger. With each concussion, I brought the little gun back down and repeated the process. I was rewarded with a flash of red and white as a .357 hollow point blossomed through Huffman's brain, but I kept pulling the trigger until the hammer clicked empty. I was out of ammo. My vision had tunneled in on the threat. My pulse was pounding like a drum. The adrenaline running through my system had tuned out the horrendous muzzle blast. I brought the gun down to my side. Huffman was dead. I tried to control my breathing as I began to hyperventilate. Perhaps I was losing my mind, for lying not 20 feet from my cubicle was a dead werewolf, a monster from fairy tales, but somehow it was here, sprawled on the carpet, brains blown out. There had not been time to feel fear or any other emotion as the creature had been chasing me, but that all came out now as if a dam had burst. The uncontrollable shaking in my limbs was slow at first, but quickly gained in intensity as I got a better look at the beast on the floor. It was like being in a car wreck. The almost disbelief as the events unfolded. The lack of emotion during the impact. And finally the brutal realization of what had happened. I just killed a werewolf. Then Mr. Huffman rose up and snarled at me. The exposed brain matter pulsed back into his head, and with a crunching noise the plates of his skull rejoined. The creature stood on his hind legs somehow, even with knees twisted like a canine's. With one taloned finger, he speared a chunk of tissue from his fur and tossed it into his maw, chewing his own discarded flesh. Returning gracefully to all fours, he shook himself like a giant dog, splattering the blood from his wounds on the white walls and motivational posters in the hall. The monster howled again, long and high-pitched, and the sound ignited some primal survival instinct buried deep within me. I turned and ran faster than I ever had before. Somehow I kept my wits, and rather than trying to outrun the creature to the elevator, I twisted hard to the right and through a doorway, slammed the door, locked it, and shoved a heavy desk in front of it. A computer monitor fell to the ground and sparked. I was in the marketing room. A poster with a kitten forlornly holding onto a clothesline had the caption, "Hang in there." "Thanks for the advice, buddy." There was no time to think. I kept moving, hoping that the door and the desk would slow Huffman down. It did, for a few seconds at least. In a cloud of splinters, the werewolf began to tear the door apart, snarling, grunting, gradually pushing the desk out of the way. There was another doorway at the end of the office that led to a side corridor. I slammed the door behind me, but there was nothing there to block it with. Weapon. Need a weapon. My gun was still in hand, but it was empty, and a lightweight snub was definitely lacking as a club. I had a concealed weapons permit for defense against muggers and assorted scumbags. I had never thought I would need it to fight a creature from the Sci-Fi Channel. There was a fire extinguisher mounted on the wall, so I pulled it down and took it with me. It was better than nothing. Down the corridor was the door to my department. If I could get through it, I had a shot at the elevator. Legs and heart pumping, I heard the door behind me crash off its hinges. Not sparing the time to look, I yanked open the door to finance and rushed through, trying to pull it closed behind me. The door slammed into Huffman's claws and muzzle. I tried in vain to close the door, but he was far stronger than I was. He swiped his talons down across my chest, tearing cleanly through my clothing and into me. Pain. Unbelievable pain. Screaming, I fell on my back and activated the fire extinguisher, directing the spray into the werewolf's gaping mouth and eyes. The creature howled, reared up on its hind legs, and covered its face. I lashed out with my foot, kicked the creature in the ribs, and knocked it back into the corridor. Scrambling to my feet, I pulled the door closed and locked it. My chest burned from the lacerations. The injury looked bad, and blood was soaking across my shirt, but the pain was now just something throbbing in the background behind the wall of adrenaline rushing through my system. The hurt would come later. I had a monster to worry about right now. The werewolf punched through the wooden door, talons narrowly missing my flesh as he searched for me. I raised the fire extinguisher above my head and lashed out at the hairy arm, smashing it again and again with blows that would easily have broken ordinary bones. Finally, the forearm shattered with an audible snap, but Huffman was not deterred. The claws kept swinging, and within seconds, the limb had seemingly healed. Shouting unintelligibly, I continued bringing the extinguisher down on Huffman, the metal echoing with each hit. We were at an impasse. He could not push through with me crushing his arms. His animal mind must have come to that same realization. As fast as it had appeared, the arm disappeared, leaving nothing but a gaping hole through the heavy oak door. My breath came in ragged gasps from the exertion. Nothing seemed to hurt him. I had to think of something. Silver. That's what always worked in the movies. Where was I going to get silver in my office? I knew the answer to that one immediately. Nowhere. If I could make it to the elevator, I would be home free, but to do so, I needed to cover 40 feet of finance and then about 100 feet of hallway. Cradling the fire extinguisher in my arms, I stumbled for the door. In the darkness, the green light from the exit sign was my beacon. The blood running down my stomach was warm and slick. I made it as far as my cubicle before Huffman got a running start and crashed into the room. There was no way I could escape before he would be on me, claws and teeth flashing, and I would be a dead man. Flight wasn't working, so now it was fight time. At least I was on my home turf.
"Huffman, you son of a bitch! Come and get me!"
I roared as I sprayed him with the fire extinguisher.
"This is my cube!"
The werewolf swatted my improvised weapon away, breaking my left hand on impact. He rammed into me and hurled me straight into the air. The ceiling tiles barely slowed my flight, and I rebounded off of a heating duct with a resounding clang. I fell onto the top of my cube wall. It was not designed to take the impact of a 300-pound man. It collapsed, and I slammed onto my desk. "Keep going." Groaning and trying to catch my breath, I tried to think of something, anything that I could do. The werewolf's head rose at the base of my desk. I kicked him hard in the face. Huffman bit my shoe off. With leg muscles like coiled springs, the werewolf easily hopped up beside me, claws clicking on the hard surface like fingernails on a chalkboard. I felt the instinctive twinge down my spine. I tried to roll off the desk, but Huffman effortlessly sunk a claw deep into my thigh, pinning me down. I screamed in pain as the talon pierced through the muscle. Grabbing the back of his hairy claw with my one working hand, I tried to pull it out. It wouldn't budge. He had me. I lay there bleeding with my leg pinned to my desk. The werewolf seemed to be enjoying himself, taking his sweet time, savoring my pain. I wondered if somewhere deep inside that animal, Mr. Huffman was there, enjoying this, loving the power, finally being able to strike back at the world he hated so much. My fear was replaced with anger. The shooting pain in my leg was unbearable, and all reason told me that I was a dead man, but I would be damned if I was going to die at the hand of that fat piece of shit, Mr. Huffman. The werewolf opened his jaws slowly, impossibly wide, and lowered them toward my face. His breath was hot and stunk like rotting meat. He was going to eat me, and somehow I knew he was going to do it as slowly and painfully as possible. Trying to be inconspicuous, I reached into my pocket. Huffman licked my face. The tongue was damp and rough, and I cringed in revulsion. Bastard probably wanted to see what I tasted like first. My pocket knife opened with a snap the instant before I jabbed it into his throat. The 3-inch Spyderco was not really a fighting knife, but I put it to the test. Twisting and pulling, I tried to do as much damage as I could. Blood geysered across my cube as I severed his jugular. He jerked his claw out of my leg, and I almost fainted as blood flooded out the gaping hole. I pulled the little blade back and stabbed it into his eye. My knife, slick with fluids, slipped out of my hand as Huffman pulled away, and it remained stuck in his face. He lashed out, striking me in the head. The claw tore down to the skull, opening my flesh, dragging down across my face. I felt an almost clinical detachment, knowing it was bad, but beyond the point of feeling or caring. My whole life had dilated down to one simple thought. Huffman must die. Lights flashed in my eyes as my enemy roared.
"Regenerate this!"
I bellowed as I grabbed my letter opener off of my desk and stabbed it repeatedly into his chest. Reversing my grip, I thrust it up through his bottom jaw, lodging it deep into the roof of his mouth, pinning his muzzle shut. Then I kicked him in the balls and smashed my chair over his head for good measure.
He hit me with a backhand that knocked me across the room like a human cannonball. I crashed through a potted plant and rolled across the carpet. Disoriented, I left Huffman swirling about like a tornado of death while I limped away, trying to staunch the massive bleeding from my leg. The werewolf thrashed, trying to pry one little knife out of his eye socket and a letter opener out of his palate. I had landed near Huffman's office, so I pulled myself through the door. Options were running out. I was going to pass out soon from blood loss. The only thing sustaining me was anger and determination, and that wouldn't last much longer. I needed to think of something, and I needed to think of it quick. Taking stock, I saw filing cabinets on each side of the door. Chair, desk, golf magazines, some lady's hand, but nothing that I could use as a weapon. I could hear the werewolf raging, smashing apart my cube, destroying anything within reach, ripping and snarling, then gradually quieting as he caught my scent. He was coming for me again. I was waiting for him. But not where he expected. As Huffman charged in, led at this point only by instinct and pure animal fury, I jumped from the top of the filing cabinet onto his back. We collided with a great deal of force, and he crashed snout first into his desk. Wrapping my arms around his neck, I choked him, straining as hard as I could.
"Let's see how tough you are without air!"
I screamed in his pointy ear. We flipped over the desk, but I stubbornly held on. His jaws snapped shut, but I was safely under them. He reached over and raked razor claws down my back. We spun crazily and crashed into the already damaged window, shattering it and sending shards raining to the ground below. By some miracle, we did not fall. Keeping my damaged left arm around his throat, I grabbed his muzzle with my good hand and wrenched it to the side with all of the strength and anger and fear that I had left. I grunted under the strain and roared. The beast's spine was like rebar. Somehow I pulled harder. The werewolf's neck broke with a sickening pop. Severed from the impulses firing in his brain, the creature's body spasmed wildly. The claws dropped away from my ravaged back, and he lay under me, flopping violently. I rolled off and dragged myself away, barely able to stay conscious. Pulling myself along with one arm, shoving with one leg, the other leg limp and leaving a wide trail of blood, I made it to the other side of the desk and collapsed. I heard the scraping of bones again as Huffman's vertebrae realigned. In a second, he would be back up, and I would not be able to fight him off again. With my good hand, I struggled up so I could see over the desk. There was Huffman's dinner, and in my brain, that was running dangerously low on blood and oxygen, it struck me as funny. "Need a hand?" I asked nobody in particular, and giggled. The werewolf was starting to sit up. In another few seconds, I would be providing him nourishment. Then he would be off killing innocent people at every full moon. On the other days of the month, I was sure that he would just keep being the worst boss in the world. I don't know which one made me angrier. Huffman swiveled his head from side to side as he regained his senses.
"Not this time, asshole!"
I said as I heaved all of my weight against the heavy desk. With a groan of protest, it moved from its depression in the carpet. Desperately shoving, my one good leg straining for traction, made even more difficult because I was missing my shoe, I pushed the desk into Huffman, knocking him over, and before the werewolf realized what was happening, I had pushed him and his damned desk out of the window. Chapter 2. I could tell I was dreaming. Everything had that fuzzy, disjointed dream feel to it.
First, I had flashes of dragging myself toward the elevator, my belt being used as an improvised tourniquet on my leg. However, in my dream, it didn't hurt a bit. Movement was slow, as though I were underwater. There were glimpses of an ambulance, and men sticking me with needles and pounding on my chest. The next scene was weird, since I usually dreamed in a first-person perspective. I floated weightless as I looked down and watched people in masks shock my heart with a defibrillator. Back in the first person again. Now I stood in a field. A good, strong, green crop of some kind. My feet were bare, and I could feel the wetness of the dew as I wiggled my toes. The sky was dark blue, and the air smelled fresh and clean, like after a summer rainstorm. A herd of cows grazed in the distance. A man stood nearby. He was old and bent. His white hair was wild, and he had a kindly smile, but hard eyes behind small, round glasses. He leaned on his cane and waved.
"Hello, boy."
The old man had some sort of heavy Eastern European accent. "Are you God?" I asked. He laughed hard.
"Me? Ha! He's good one. Fred not. I just friend."
"Am I dead?"
"Almost. But you need go back. You have work to do."
"Yes,
much work."
"Work?
A calling. Is hard, but is good."
"A calling?
From before you born. How you say?
Preordination?
More like you get short straw. Now go. No time. I send you back."
"Will we meet again?"
"Only if you are slow-witted, boy, and get dead again."
The nice dream ended, and my world exploded in pain. There was a steady beeping noise. It matched pace with my heartbeat. Bump, bump. Two black shapes stood over me.
"I say we waste him now."
"Not yet. No way he's clean. You know the rules."
"The rules are wrong. I could smother him with his pillow and nobody would ever know."
"I would know." I went back to sleep. I awoke to the smell of hospital antiseptic. My eyes were matted shut, my mouth was horribly dry, and my tongue was stuck to the roof of my mouth. I had that weird, tingly, high-on-painkillers feeling, which I had not felt since the last time I had surgery years before. Forcing my eyes open and gradually adjusting to the muted light, I could see that I was in a hospital room. Hospitals make me nervous and uncomfortable. Well, right now, it sure beat the alternative. Trying to sit up, I realized that I had an IV running into my arm, bulky bandages placed on my chest, legs, and back, and my left hand was in a cast. Wincing at the tightness in my scalp, I gingerly reached up and touched my forehead. There was no bandage there, and I counted at least 50 prickly stitches that ran from the crown of my head, right between my eyebrows, across the bridge of my nose, and ended on my cheek. I was thankful that I did not have a mirror. Being naturally curious, and of course fearless on a morphine drip, I lifted up the edge of the big bandage on my chest. They had used staples to close the deeper lacerations there. In my drug-induced stupor, it struck me as funny that the doctors had shaved my chest. That would probably itch bad later. I did not remember how I had gotten there or even how long I had been out. My watch could tell me what day it was, but it was missing, as were all my clothes. All I had on was a flimsy gown and a medical supply store's worth of bandages. As my senses gradually returned, I started to remember what had happened to put me here. I had to admit that at first I blamed my strange memory on the drugs. Killer werewolf boss?
Yep. Whatever they gave me, it sure was some good stuff.
You imagined the whole thing, the logical part of my brain told me. You must have been in some sort of accident and woke up here. There's no such thing as monsters. Mr. Huffman didn't turn into a werewolf. You didn't push him out a window. Those can't possibly be claw marks. They're from a car wreck or something. The whole thing is a bad hallucination. Everybody at work will laugh when they hear your crazy story. Huffman is probably there now, complaining that you are out and running up workers' comp.
Screw you, logical brain. I know what I saw.
There was only one way to find out what put me in here. There was a call button attached to the IV. I pushed it and waited, trying not to dwell on the image of Huffman's face turning into an incisor-filled muzzle. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, the door opened. Unfortunately, it was not a nurse.
Mr. Pitt, I'm Special Agent Myers, and this is Special Agent Franks. We're with the government.
The two men flashed their credentials in my general direction. One agent was a dark, brooding type, obviously muscular and grim of attitude. The speaker was older and looked more like a college professor than a fed. They were both wearing off-the-rack suits, and neither looked very happy. They pulled up chairs. The professor crossed his legs, steepled his fingers, and scowled at me. The younger one pulled his gun.
"Move and I'll kill you," he said,
and I did not doubt him for an instant. It was a Glock, and it had a sound suppressor screwed onto its muzzle. I did not know what caliber it was, but from where I was sitting, the bore looked freaking huge. The suppressor did not waver. I did not move. The professor spoke.
"Mr. Pitt, would you care to tell us what happened at your office?"
Speaking was difficult with my bad case of cotton mouth. I told them. They could probably tell that I was either asking for water or speaking in tongues. The professor hesitated and then obliged, taking a cup off the dresser and pressing the straw to my lips. The cold wetness was the best thing in the world. The agent called Franks leaned slightly forward so he could still shoot me if necessary. That guy obviously took his job very seriously.
Thanks, I croaked.
You're welcome. Now tell us what happened before Agent Franks here gets cranky.
I paused, not really wanting to tell the FBI that my boss had transformed into a monster and tried to eat me before I managed to snap his neck and shove him out the window. They would lock me up for sure if I said that. So I improvised.
I fell down the stairs.
Hey, I was on morphine. It was the best I could come up with on short notice. The professor frowned.
Cut the crap, Pitt. We know what happened. We watched the security tapes already. 5 days ago, your supervisor, one Cecil Huffman, transformed into a lycanthrope, a werewolf in this case, and attempted to kill you. You fought him off and pushed him to his death.
I was shocked. The FBI agent seemed to not have a problem with the idea that my boss had turned into a werewolf. I was also surprised that I had been out for 5 straight days. But mostly I was surprised that Mr. Huffman's first name had been Cecil.
It was self-defense. I'm the good guy here. Why the gun?
You know how people become werewolves, don't you, Mr. Pitt? That's the one thing that the movies get right. If you're bitten by one, you too will be infected. The DNA-altering virus lives in their saliva. If you're clawed, there is a smaller chance that you can be infected, but it's still possible. If we had found a single clear bite mark on you, we would be disposing of your body right now. Under the Anti-Lycanthrope Act of 95, we're supposed to terminate all confirmed were-creatures immediately. I'm sorry.
I don't think he bit me, I squeaked.
But I felt a lump of dread in my gut. He had mauled me pretty badly. Was I going to turn into a werewolf?
Or was the FBI just going to shoot me first?
Silver bullets, grunted Agent Franks. He kept the Glock centered on my head. I don't know what kind of Jackie Chan move he was expecting me to pull, but I wasn't planning on going anywhere. I could barely move.
Just in case.
So now what? I queried.
We wait. A sample of your blood has been sent for testing. If it comes back positive, you will have to be put down. If it comes back negative, you're free to go. We should be getting a call shortly.
He said, put down, like I was some sort of dog.
This encounter was just strengthening my already strong anti-authoritarian tendencies.
You'll just let me go?
Yes, though if you ever speak of this in public, you will be in violation of the Unearthly Forces Disclosure Act, and you'll be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Franks nodded and muttered,
lead bullets.
His conversation skills seemed rather limited.
Meyer's eyes betrayed an emotion that I thought might have been pity.
Look, Mr. Pitt, this is for your own good. If you're infected, we're doing you a favor. Otherwise, in 3 weeks, you'll be eating little old ladies and babies. Hopefully the tests come back negative, and we forget this ever happened.
So what now?
Just chill for a while,
Agent Frank said.
Easy for you to say.
A doctor came in and took my pulse and blood pressure. A nurse changed my IV and checked my bandages. The staff seemed intimidated by the feds and left without talking. Flowers were delivered. They were from Hansen Industries, with a card wishing me a speedy recovery. Along with the card, there was also a letter on Hansen Industries stationery that informed me that I was fired for violating the official workplace safety code No Weapons in the Workplace rule. If I did not want to risk an interruption to my workers' compensation, I had best not protest the firing. Hugs and kisses, Human Resources. I pushed the button on the motorized bed so I could sit upright. Myers turned on the little TV, and we watched Jeopardy. Watching television kept my brain occupied, and more importantly, kept me from dwelling on the possibility of ending up dead, or even worse, like Huffman. Myers was pretty good, but I was destroying him. I'm a trivia king. Franks kept the gun in his lap and sipped a Diet Coke. I tried not to think about the fact that the nice men from the government were here to shoot me in the brain with silver bullets. The feeling of helplessness was horrible. Alex Trebek had all of the answers. I just had questions.
What is Constantinople?
So, Myers, how bad was I injured?
You lost a lot of blood and technically died on the operating table for 2 minutes. No brain activity at all. You have about 300 stitches and staples in you and some broken bones. If we don't have to shoot you, you should heal up just fine. But you won't ever be pretty.
What is the Great Wall of China?
The thought that I had actually been dead was interesting. That was kind of cool. I wondered if I could use that as a pickup line.
Who is Gandhi?
What happened to Mr. Huffman?
He landed on a Lincoln Navigator. The desk landed on him. He was pulped. Nobody else got hurt. He was frustrated. I was tearing him up in the famous history category. I could tell the professor was used to winning.
Ha ha, sucker. Eat hot trivia death.
What was the Magna Carta?
Huffman didn't pull back together or anything, did he?
Damn, you're fast.
Nope. Lycanthropes can regenerate from just about anything other than silver, but it takes energy to restore tissue. There's only so much energy stored in one body, so if you inflict enough damage on them, they die.
Fire, grunted Franks.
Indeed, fire works great.
Wait, I know this. What is uranium?
He shouted. I made a buzzing sound. Wrong.
What is beryllium? Damn, Myers. I thought you had to have an education to be a G-man. You suck.
The senior FBI man changed the TV channel to CNN and sulked. Well, at least I had the satisfaction that if they were going to kill me, I had defended my honor on the field of useless knowledge. The news was saying something about a huge pipeline explosion in a remote part of Russia, apparently caused by Chechen terrorists. I tuned it out and went back to harassing the feds.
Does this kind of thing happen all of the time? How did Huffman become a werewolf? Are there many more out there?
You ask too many questions, Frank said.
My associate is correct, Mr. Pitt. This subject's on a need-to-know basis. You just need to know to keep your mouth shut.
Fine. I figured I would just go back to sleep. Stupid feds.
There was a knock on the door. It must have just been a mere courtesy knock, because whoever it was immediately barged in. Franks barely had time to hide his Glock under an issue of Martha Stewart Living. The man was of average height and lean, with short-cropped, sandy blonde hair, probably in his mid-40s. With no really remarkable features, he was not a memorable-looking guy, but emanated an old-school toughness when he strutted into the room, an attitude like a Bogart or a Cagney from the golden age of movies. A cigarette hung lazily from the corner of his mouth, in clear violation of hospital rules. Myers grimaced, and it looked like Franks gave some serious thought about pointing his gun at somebody else for a change.
Well, if it ain't the Junior Danger Rangers, how's the murdering witnesses business?
The man asked, reaching into the pocket of his leather bomber jacket and pulling out a business card. He stuck the card into the edge of my wrist cast. It stuck there, vibrating slightly.
Screw you, Harbinger, Frank said.
Situation's under control. No need for you here, the professor stated in a cold voice.
I'll be ice skating in hell before I believe that you federal weasels have anything under control.
You better shut up, Franks growled.
Or what?
The man said with calculated belligerence and just a touch of a southern accent.
Gonna arrest me?
You might not like it much, but we're a legitimate business again. If you feds hadn't booted us out of Yellowstone, that werewolf wouldn't have gotten away, that fat guy wouldn't have gotten bitten, and this guy never would have gotten attacked.
National parks are our jurisdiction. Your people can't be legally armed in them, so you were out of luck. So you just need to calm down,
Myers stated in a manner that suggested he was used to being obeyed. The new guy sneered.
I need to calm down, Myers? Your bureaucratic nonsense caused this trail of bodies. You could have let us break a couple of stupid laws, and you wouldn't have two dead people in this one.
He jerked a thumb in my general direction.
The rules are there for a reason. Not obeying the rules is what got you shut down the first time. I think it was a mistake to ever let your kind back into business.
Needless to say, the atmosphere in the room was very tense. I was pretty much forgotten in my heap of bandages and bedpans. Myers and the interloper were locked in a staring contest. Franks looked ready to escort our guest out, preferably head first down the stairs. Anybody who made these guys that uncomfortable was all right by me.
Not to interrupt this love fest or anything, but who are you?
Finally, Myers must have blinked and ended the stare off. The stranger looked at me as if he was sizing me up. His eyes were cold, blue, and intimidating. After a long, unblinking moment, he finally must have decided I passed muster, since he held out his hand to shake mine. Franks removed the Martha Stewart magazine to display his gun, just to remind me not to try anything.
Name's Earl Harbinger. I'm with MHI.
Owen Pitt, CPA.
His grip was like iron.
MHI? Is that like some top-secret government agency or something?
I asked. Agent Myers snickered. Not even close. Harbinger just scowled at them.
No. If I worked with these idiots, I would kill myself. We're a private organization. We're a for-profit business, and if I do say so myself, we're the premier leader in our field. One which I would say that you would probably be pretty good at. You did good back there.
Thanks, but I don't think it's going to be good enough. These guys tell me that I'm probably going to end up turning into something like my boss. It was an ugly thing to say, and I could feel a great cold weight in my chest as I said it. I don't want to end up like that. The stranger shook his head. Don't worry about it.
Recruiting some fresh cannon fodder, Harbinger?
Myers interrupted.
Right now Mr. Pitt is in our custody, and he doesn't go anywhere until I say so.
I'm not recruiting, Myers, but if you're looking, I hear Walmart needs a new door greeter, he responded.
Turning back to me, he continued speaking as if he had never been cut off. Have you asked yourself why every one of your injuries is bandaged except for that great big slash on your head?
Subconsciously, I reached up and touched the nasty pile of stitches that snaked down my face. All I knew was that it was going to leave a horrible scar.
It's uncovered so they could watch it. If you had started to heal unnaturally fast, they would have dropped you dead in a heartbeat. From the amount of damage you sustained, I'm sure they were positive that you were going to make the change. I don't think anybody has ever been that torn up by a were-creature and lived. I'm also guessing that since you haven't started to heal yet, they've sent out for a blood test to be sure, because they're probably itching to finish you. But they don't dare, just in case you're still human.
They said they were waiting for a test.
Damn right they are. But let me tell you something. I wrote the book on these monsters. If you haven't shown any signs after 5 days, I give you my word that you ain't infected.
Really? I felt the first real surge of hope since I had woken up in this antiseptic dungeon.
You're going to be fine. Look, when these jerk-offs get their test back negative and you get out of here, give me a call. You have my card. We need to talk. Get some rest.
Strangely enough, I believed the stranger's promise. He did not strike me as the kind of person to sugarcoat an ugly truth.
Harbinger stalked out, rudely bumping into Agent Myers on the way. The senior agent appeared ruffled, but he did not speak until after the door shut and our guest was gone.
You'd best stay away from that bunch, Pitt, if you know what's good for you. They're going to screw up someday, and every last one of them is going to end up in prison or dead. They don't respect governmental authority.
Well, neither did I. I flipped the agents the bird.
You know what? I'm going back to sleep. I've had a crappy day.
If your stupid test comes back positive, just shoot me and get it over with. If it comes back negative, get the hell out and leave me alone. Either way, you don't need to wake me.
I pushed the button to lower the bed back into a sleeping position. It wasn't as dramatic as a good door slam, but it would have to do. It actually only took me a few minutes to fade out. My body was still racked with painful injuries, and the painkiller still hummed through my system. But I was careful to first safely cradle the business card in my hand. The feds went back to watching TV. I had a strange dream. It was hazy and blurry, jerky and disjointed, violent and quick. Not like a normal dream at all. There was a battle. I did not know when it took place, but somehow I knew that it had occurred in the past. Details were obscured by billowing clouds of snow. Huge numbers of soldiers defended against a single, unnatural being, trying in vain to keep him from his goal, and dying by the score. The only thing that mattered to him had been taken, and he had come to reclaim it. He was the guardian. There was an evil thing in the dream, even more sinister than the guardian. It, too, was old, cursed, and blighted, and seething with rage and hate. It was weakened by failure and retreated as the Guardian approached. Its final minions fell before the immortal killer as the cursed thing fled into the ruins. The last soldier waited for the Guardian. He had been the leader of the Blood Dragon.